Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars, learning that Star-Lord with idiots.
Hello, and welcome to Star Wars Lore with Idiots, the show where a bunch of grown men think that holding a lightsaber with the pointy end faced first is proper procedure. With that, let's turn it over to our lore master, Ranger J1999, and the buffoons, Rambam001, Karth, and Kashmir.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another edition, episode, whatever you want to call it, of Star Wars Lore with Idiots, the show where myself, the lore master, Ranger J1999, tries to teach a bunch of idiots lore about Star Wars, and it goes horribly, horribly wrong. Glad to have you guys here. Welcome to another edition of the show. We record this every Sunday now, and then we put it out. If you like the show and you like what we're doing, leave comments on the, we upload this on YouTube that same week. And so if you like what you're hearing, leave comments, subscribe to the channel so you can get those updates and when we drop the lore video. And also think about coming to Patreon. If you become a patron, you get insight and input on like the topics that we pick and kind of the direction we go. Plus, you get the lore series early in the Patreon, the VIP, and our Discord. So there's a lot of benefits becoming a Patreon. We're only about $250 away from hitting our mark. If we hit our mark, then of $1,000 monthly from Patreons, then we will, a lot of things will kick over. We'll go weekly with the lore series. We'll start uploading it to, you know, for podcast form, to like iTunes, stuff like that. Ram, well, I'll introduce here in a second. We'll become the Lord Master for one of the rounds, and he will be the Lord Master, and I get to be one of the idiots, 10 idiots, but still an idiot nonetheless. So there you go. Here with that, that's all said and done. So think about coming to Patreon, and there's a lot of other benefits that you get from supporting us. So there you go. That being said, let's meet the idiots, and we'll start with Ram, because Ram, do you know how to tell time? Because damn it, Ram, you're supposed to be here 30 minutes ago.
What is time?
That's what I thought. Yeah. We also got Karth, who was on time. Thank you, Karth. You're a good friend.
I do what I can to support the cause. That's and right. To, you know, herp and derp.
Yeah, yeah. And another good friend is Kashmir. He was also, not only was he on time, but he was here early. Thank you, Kashmir.
Anything for you.
Yeah,
anything.
See? Yes, yeah.
Listen, it's not my fault the call wasn't open yet, okay?
Well, that's true. I mean, I opened it up early, but
I blame my lateness on the fact that I was still trying to figure out research on this magical stick from last
listen,
discussion.
I don't want to hear about the goddamn stick. Okay, that's the only reference we're going to make to the damn stick. You want to know what happened with the stick? Go watch the previous episode on XR Cooting. Well,
you look Beldroma.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so angry. Just think of the stick. I can't even talk. But yeah, that would be the only mention of said magical stick, you son of a bitch. All right. No, we always like to go around. It's early, but you know, doing this with these guys causes alcoholism to run rampant in my genetic makeup. So I am drinking a little bit of Jack Daniels and Dr. Pepper. I'm keeping it simple. Ram, you drinking anything? Start the day off there, Mr. Man.
Just a little bit of Jack. Nothing too
crazy. There you go. All right. And
make it slow.
Yeah, Karth, anything fall in your coffee today?
Oh yeah, like he does every Friday, every morning with this. I have to properly loosen up when it comes to doing anything with Ram. So you know.
And last but not least, Kashmir's always drinking some kind of excellent bourbon and or whiskey or booze of some sort. What do you got today there for us, Big K?
Today I am trying. I've never had this before, but I'm sipping on High West Bourbon.
Ooh, so very far, nice.
So far, not bad.
Nice. Very nice. All right. Okay, now that we've got that done, now sometimes I will give a quote. Sometimes I'll let these guys kind of guess. We know where we're kind of at for like where we're at and what we're covering. However, they don't know what I'm going to cover today. So I'm going to give you guys a quote, and we're going to see if the idiots can guess what it is. So here you go.
Your quote, we were talking about Sith.
Well, we are, but you don't know which Sith I'm talking about.
Oh.
Right. Oh. All right. Quote. My life spans millennial. Legions have risen to test me. My ascendance is inevitable. The day a year, millennium, it matters not. I hold the patience of stone and the will of stars. Your striving is insufficient. Let your death be the same. All right. That's your quote for the day. I read it slow so it could marinate in your brains. Kashmir, I'm going to go to you first. Who do you think we are covering today?
The only guess I could possibly say is no clue. I don't even have a guess for you.
Don't even have a guess. Wow, just tapping out. All right, tap out early from Kashmir. Wow, not even wow, that's an impressive quote. If it made even you couldn't even come up with something funny to say. Okay, go. Wow. Okay. Ram, you know the rules. Nothing mace or mace related or mace equivalent in any of your answers. What do you think the topic? What do you think the topic would do?
You know, like everything you just described, everything you just said, it's like the very foundation and just very description of this guy that I know called Samuel L. Jackson.
What did I just say?
You said nothing Mace Windu.
I said
he's not Mace Windu. Samuel Jackson is a real person.
I said related. That's related. You're a piece of shit. All right. And last but not least, Karth. Karth or Genicus, what do you think? What is your guess?
Good talk.
Karth is so spellbound, he cannot even answer right now. This is amazing. I've given one of the best quotes we have ever done. Karth, are you still...
Well, there you go. There you go.
Okay, apparently now he's talking. Okay, yeah.
My headset light was off, but it was not unmuted. So there's that. So my little rant there just went right to the wayside.
No, yeah, we'll start again from the beginning. There you go.
I was all about my boy Darth Nihilus here. You know, the devourer of worlds.
You think it's Darth Nihilus. It's not a bad guess. You know what? See, the other two should listen to Karth. That's actually in the realm of possibility. That's not a bad guess. It's not right, but damn, that's not a bad guess. Karth, thank you. You're a good friend, Karth. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, you know, I figured it was something dark side related.
That's right. You were using your brain matter, and I appreciate you.
Fucking carried away.
Now, the person we will be covering today is none other than Darth Vitiate, or as he was originally known, Darth Tenebra. So, yes, that is who we're going to cover today. Now, what do you guys know? Ram and Karth, I know you guys know a little bit of who Vitiate is, just who he is. But we're going to get into his origins, his history, why he's one of the most powerful Sith that has ever existed in the lore. That being said, I know you two know some things. We'll go to you in a second. Kashmir, what do you know about old Darth Vitiate, a.k.a. Tenebrow, a.k.a. Velcorn?
Didn't we talk about him when we were discussing Darth Revan?
We did. God, listen to this. God, we are two for days for Ranger's mind blown. Jesus, what is happening? You guys actually paid attention. Oh, my God. I'm so proud of you right now. Okay. Oh, made my day. So yes, we did cover him a little bit in the Darth Revan series. Yes.
Is he? All right, now I'm gonna stretch it, and I might ruin it this for you, but was he the one with the Star Forge?
He was related to the Star Forge. That's not a bad no. I mean, he sent them to the Star Forge. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, look at Big K. Okay.
Yeah. Pay attention.
I'm a proud sensei right now. He's learning, and that's the whole purpose of this. Oh, okay. Ram, yeah, well, I'm pretty sure you know some things about Darth V shit. I'm gonna throw some things out there. You know about old Darth V?
He is an emperor of some sort. He had two apprentices, one of which tried to turn on him and then tried to kill him. Yeah. Arkin and some other guy.
Going further. No.
Too far. You have gone too far.
That's not. Just stop, Ram. Just stop. Okay. Okay. You had me, and then you lost.
I'll get into it.
All right. Now you're just being an ass. Okay, Karth, your turn, please. Make Ram shut up.
What do I know about Valkorion?
Vashiet, whatever, you know.
Vashiet, Tenebrae. Oh, he is. You know,
you're familiar.
Kind of this crazy Sith dude who does a lot of crazy things. Mm-hmm. Spends a lot of time trying to perfect living forever. And
that's actually a really good answer. Good answer. Good answer. Good answer.
A lot of things that most would find very. Bad?
Oh, very bad. He's a very, very not good dude. Oh, boy, is he not ever. Now, as with all the lore stuff, I'm going to get into this, his origins, things of that nature. I'm not getting into the minutia detail, just general points. Because if I was to sit here and get into the minutia, we'd be here for so many hours. And I don't want this to be in so many hours. Yeah, it's a lot. So, all right. Now, Vashiet was originally known as Darth Tenebra, as we already discussed, known him as Darth Vashiet, the Sith Emperor, and later as the Immortal Emperor Valkorion of the Eternal Empire, was an ancient dark Sith deity who manipulated galactic affairs for nearly 1,500 years. Let that sit in your brain for a moment and marinate. Now, he was originally born in the year 5113 BBY. And he was the illegitimate son of Lord Dramath and the old Sith Empire. He was a big problem from the beginning. Yeah. He rose to power at an early age. I'll tell you here in a second how early, as he destroyed and conquered the planet Meridus, killing tens of thousands of people and conquering the world by the age of 10. He did this when he was 10.
I too remember going to the backyard and just raising hell.
You should see the stuff he did when he was 6. I'm leaving that out, but yes. So he and he'd always had
not a happy with this juice box.
No,
destroy the house.
Yeah, pretty much. He was ridiculous. So things led up to this, culminating to what he did here on this planet at the age of 10. His father, not too happy about this, confronted him, and Tenebris was like, nah. He was giving him the big F you, and then twisted his father's neck, broke it, severed his father's power in him from the Force, and then had his spirit imprisoned and being tormented for all time at the age of 10. And he enjoyed torturing and tormenting his mother with the Force as well. So, really a sick puppy at an early age. So, because of his actions, the great Lord, because he got, this is how old he is, the Sith Lord, of course, we've talked about him before, Marka Ragnos, recognized his power and, you know, and renamed him with the Sith, as in Sith tradition, as Lord Vashiet, as the new ruler of Medidreus, and then he renamed it to Nathema. And he would rule it for the next century. Now, during this time, he was known as the Sith Scholar. He didn't really get involved in the Sith power struggle. He just wasn't interested. He's like, I got my power base. I want to learn as much as possible. And like a giant Sith sponge, he did for the next 100 years. But he didn't get into the politics. He was like, nah. y'all good over there. And Ragnos even prophesied that he would become one of the greatest Sith lords ever. But he was looking for other things, you know, and he wasn't fully into the, you know, he just didn't buy into some of the Sith bullshit that was going on, especially when it came to, we talked about this in the Sith history, you know, Sadao and Kresh and their struggles. And after their defeat, and of course we just discussed it in the Great Hyperspace War, he finally enacted, he'd been learning all this Sith alchemy, magic, traditions, things that he could do. And so he came up with a plan, and he lured and took the remaining Sith lords to his homeworld, you know, where in an elaborate Sith ritual, which nobody knew more about Sith rituals than this guy. He drained all their life's essence. But he didn't stop there. He decided, I'm going to drain the entire planet. And he did. He's drained the entire life essence of the entire planet. And in doing so, did two things. He increased his power in the Force tenfold. And two, it prolonged his life. There's a reason why he's been around for as, and was around for as long as he was, because he had learned these ancient Sith rituals, magic abilities, to do these kind of things. So he was the first one to really enact this ability. And that's why he's so long lived and so powerful, because when he would use Force strain, but on an epic level with the Sith ritual, he would get all their power. It would prolong his life. It pretty much made him almost damn near immortal. Not fully immortal, but, you know, be able to last a long time. So that's his original startup. So I'm going to leave it open to questions. So questions? Anybody got questions about the young psychotic scholar, Sith Lord Darth Tenebra, who is now Darth Vitiate?
Question. So when he performed the first ritual, was it like all life on the planet, like that we would describe as life, like all humanoids, or was it like everything, like did he decimate the entire planet to basically just a giant barren rock?
Yeah, remember we were playing the Old Republic. You remember what happened to Zoist?
Yes. I was just seeing if it was like if Zoist was a perfection of that, or if it was a repeat of that.
Repeat.
Oh, yes.
That's
one bad cookie.
Yeah, he's not good. Anything that's all life, that's, you know, because the Force is tied to all life, right? Even at a microscopic level. It gone. Just gone. All to him. Nom, 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 nom. Good question. Anybody else?
I was going to make a comment. Originally, I was going to have a talk with my kids after this about what the hell are they doing, because they're older than 6 and 10.
Yeah.
With their life. I mean, come on. But then you started going on about how he, you know, what he did to his parents. So I will not have that conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a good conversation to have. If your kids have any kind of dark side abilities, I don't think it's something you want to broach there with them. Their Circle K. I don't think that'll go well for you. Yeah, Big K, Circle K, I call you whatever you want, Special K, whatever you want. I can do that because you guys give me ulcers, so I'm firing back. So,
not because I give you gas.
You know, if you are Circle K, you would give me gas. That is true. I would have to pay for it, but yes. Okay. Any other questions, Ram? Any thoughts or anything?
So I thought Nihilus was like the eater of worlds. This guy's like the eater of everything.
Nihilus is nothing compared to Vitiate. Nobody's compared to Vitiate. I've said it in the previous videos, and we're going to talk about all this stuff he does. We're also going to get into what makes him one of the most powerful Sith Lords.
I don't get that, because this guy's only human. Nihilus wasn't human. Nihilus was a human that was absorbed by
the
Force.
Actually, he was a Sith. Right? He was a Sith. He wasn't human. He was human-ish, you know, humanoid, but he was a Sith. He was part of the Sith pure bloodline.
Oh, Vitiate?
Yeah. His parents were both Sith. He was born into Sith royalty, basically.
He didn't have the tentacles and shit.
Not all the Sith did.
Oh, Tenebrae, his original
form. His original form, yeah. He became Vitiate and took on the form of a human when he became the Emperor.
Yeah.
Tenebrae actually has the Sith look.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Why would you change that? I like tentacles on my face.
I mean, to each their own. We don't king shame here. So, all right. Now, let's get to so after this, after the Great Hyperspace War, we know how that turned out. We did a lore video on it. He took the remaining Sith survivors and Sith lords that from other planets that he didn't devour, and he took the survivors to Dromund Kaas. He proclaimed himself the Emperor, and he established and started the new Sith Empire. And he would work on this for the next 1,000 years. And he expanded and he built the new Sith Empire to what we see. And if you played the Old Republic, that's all Vitiate. He was in the background, controlling everything, setting things up, getting it militarized, the whole thing. So he set up the power structure, the government, everything. And, you know, doing his thing to keep himself alive. So he was able to never, I mean, as powerful he was, And we'll, I'm going to give you guys a story later on of like just how ridiculous he was in the Force. Yeah. But he, during this time, as he started exploring and expanding the Sith Empire, he discovered the lost world of Zakur in the Eternal Fleet. And this is an ancient armada with unmatched technology. He was really dissatisfied with the Sith ideology and, you know, their pitfalls and downfalls and stuff like that. And so he decided to divide his consciousness, which is one of the things he could do, and took over a young Zakul warrior named Valkorion. And while he's getting the Sith Empire up and running, he created another empire and civilization known as the Internal Empire. So while he's creating the Sith Empire, on the one hand, for 1,000 years, he's split his consciousness and is running another empire as another person, as Valkorion. They're both Vitiate. They're both Tenebra, but the one's Darth Vitiate running the Sith Empire, and the other one is Valkorion with the Eternal Empire. And here's the crazy thing. He's doing all this stuff, but these two things that he's doing were just building blocks to his true intentions. The one thing he wanted was absolute immortality above all else. He wanted to keep expressing and enjoying all the pleasures of life and to keep expanding his knowledge and his creations and power and everything across the galaxy. Now, one of the things is Tenebra Vitiate Valkorion was hyper intelligent. There's no question about that, but he was also one of the best schemers and plotters and planners the galaxy has ever known. So he wants to become immortal. He knows there's a ritual that can do that. So he plotted, schemed, and set in motion plans to initiate a war between the Sith Empire and the Galactic Republic to conquer for sure. But that was just the front of what he was doing, because known only to him and a few others that just found out this reason, the real reason was because he had created a new ritual. And with the death caused from the conflict that would follow, would allow him to consume almost everything in the galaxy, and thus allowing him to become an all-powerful Sith god. If he could pull this off, he could become a powerful Sith god. Questions? And hear your guys' brains melting up.
We have to have a brain for that to happen.
Good point. That's good point, fair. Grant. That's true, Grant. That's true. Any questions up to this point? We all on the same page. We're all good. We need to drink some more bourbon.
So basically inciting a galactic-wide war to cause enough death,
yep,
to consume a galaxy,
yep,
to then live forever.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, kill everybody, live forever, rule over nothing.
Well, no, he just needed the death would allow him to feel the ritual to remember how the other one went. Where when he consumes life, whatever life consumed, he doesn't have to consume the entire galaxy, right? But if there's enough death, he has enough energy in the Force to one become truly immortal and think of how powerful he would become in the Force. And then he can rule and do whatever he wants and enjoy life and expand his knowledge and continue conquering.
You know, I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Oh, really? What's the pattern?
Sith like to live immortal.
Yeah?
They like that for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, no, it's not so much they want to be immortal. A lot of Sith, they just crave power. Right. Think of like liches in the D&D game world. Initially, they just want power and magic, you know, and all the stuff that comes with it. They reach a certain point where they want to become immortal. And so they want to continue to expand their knowledge and become more powerful. But they have a mortal lifespan. So what do? The Sith were the ones that tried to start. You know, remember Exar Kun tried to do it in our last video. Some other Sith had tried. And in a sense, they like Frida Nod was technically immortal, but he was only partway there because he was just a spirit, but he was kind of tied in until he can find another vessel. That was kind of a form of immortality. But yeah, the Sith were like liches in that sense. They were looking for ways to create some sort of way to prolong their life, even if it was through a natural means. And really,
it never works out real well.
It did for Vitiate. Look how he's doing so far.
He's dead.
Well, yeah, but that's not because he didn't have the ability to do it. He just got stopped by others. If he had been successful, if he had not been stopped, he would have become immortal.
Right. So it seems like what the Sith really need to be doing is, instead of trying to figure out ways to be immortal,
sure,
figure out ways to how to not die by others.
Well, that's
because somehow all the Sith always end up dying when they're trying to become immortal.
Mm-hmm.
Weird how that works.
Well,
it's a eucatastrophe. It's like what Tolkien wrote in his books, that there's a catastrophe, but there's always the eucatastrophe. That moment when you think all is lost, that some miracle happens where a hero or some group of people come along and save the day. You know, where when the night is darkest right before the light, right? That kind of saying. So yeah.
Ooh, that's Batman.
I got these.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes down to, though, is like Vitiate had those plans. The problem is that it's something from like the newer stuff of Star Wars. The Force always tries to seek balance.
Yep.
So it's like every time Vitiate countered that, another one would start. And so that's kind of what ended up happening. And you start to unravel his plans, even like inadvertently. You don't even think you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But then by the time you get to it, it all culminates into this masterful stroke of like, get wrecked, nerd. Yeah. But yeah, Vitiate was super, super close.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into it now. So we talked about the last video with Exar Kun and Ula Kul Joma. While all that's still going on, Vitiate's just sitting there building up his power base, watching everything happening. He didn't intervene or do anything while that was going on because he wanted the Republic to be weak. So when those two came out of nowhere, he didn't know about Freed Anon, but when those two came out of nowhere, he just sat back and watched like, good, good. Destroy yourselves. But it also gave him the idea of the Mandalorians. That's where the Mandalorian idea came from his brain. And so after all that happens, he gives it some time, and some time goes by. And so his first move, his first part of his plan, he wanted to orchestrate the Mandalorian Wars as a preliminary invasion of the Republic. We talked about that in the Darth Revan lore video, that Mandalore the Ultimate was told by a Sith at the prophecy that they had to fight the war. That's Vitiate's doing. So Vitiate's, after seeing what the Mandalorians did with Exar Kun, they were still around, and then he set them loose. He's like, you got to do this, you know, you'll be successful. He lied, of course, but, you know, he was told that, you know, he had to do this. It was prophecy. So that's what starts the Mandalorian War, which we talked about in the Darth Revan video. However, it does not go quite to plan, as there were two great Jedi who we've talked about before, named Revan and Alec, who would become Darth Revan and Malak, defeated the Mandalorians, as we previously discussed. This also led, as we discussed in the Revan video, of them learning about the Sith, and then eventually learn about Vitiate. And we talked about them going to Jomon Kaas, learning about the Sith, learning about the Emperor, and then going to confront the Emperor. Well, one of the main power, and we'll talk about the powers of Vitiate, but we talked about this, that he was just incredible with his mind abilities and his will to dominate. He dominated those two. And so the Mandalorian Wars was successful in the sense that it caused a lot of death and destruction, but he needed more death and destruction. So he's like, okay, well, that didn't go all the way planned, but good enough. Let's go finish the work. So that's why he sent Darth Revan and Malak back to the Republic. However, We got into it a little bit in the Darth Revan video with their interaction with the Star Forge, is why Vitiate sent them there to go find it and use it as kind of the next bulwark, the next vanguard to his true Sith invasion. That didn't work because they were able to break free, and that led to the Great Jedi Civil War, which we talked about, which nearly destroyed the Jedi and the Republic. And Vitiate was getting really close to being able to enact his story. However, the redemption of Revan led him to start getting his memories back, and then he confronts Vishyet. We talked about in the Revan video how he gets captured and he was held in place for 300 years. What we didn't talk about is the reason that he was is because Revan was exceptionally powerful in the Force too. And when Vishyet captured him, he used his mind, and Revan and his mind kind of merged. So anytime Vishyet was doing stuff, he had Revan in his mind fighting him. So for the next 300 years, while Revan was in prison and held in stasis, his mind was still working. So he was locked with Vishyet. He just used the Force to stay with Vishyet the whole time, learn his plans as much as he could, and just fuck with Vishyet and delay him. Because he knew what, he could see what Vishyet was trying to plan, and he was trying to do whatever he could to stall it out, because he knew what the next step was. And Revan didn't want that. And two, he really wanted to kill Vishyet. Revan was a very patient man. For 300 years, he kept the Emperor Palpatine's plans from coming to fruition. Now, we do know, as we've seen in the Old Republic cinematics and in the, if you play the game, the Sith Empire does eventually invade. And you can see those in the cinematics, and you can, if you play the game, you'll see all that stuff. And this was, and they nearly conquered the galaxy. But Revan being Revan and doing Revan things would influence Vishyet, who is now distracted by the birth of his three children as Valkorion and their mother, the Zagul Knight, Senya Tyrell, to sue for peace instead, promoting a ceasefire and a cold war between the two sides would be enacted in the signing of the Treaty of Coruscant. And the Treaty of Coruscant is the treaty that was signed. And if you've seen in the cinematic where Malgus invades the Jedi Temple, that was a surprise attack that the Sith Empire did on Coruscant to get a more stronger position in the bargaining table for the Treaty of Coruscant. But Vishyet was a little bit distracted because the children, he saw potential in them, so he held off his plans as he started developing them in the Eternal Empire. But his three children, we'll get to their own story with them and how ridiculous powerful they were, but that got him some other schemes going on in his mind, like, what can I do with these kids? Some potential here. You know, so, and that's all due to Revan being in his mind saying, you got those three powerful kids. And Vishyet's going, yeah, you do have those powerful kids. In the galaxy. So he got distracted, and Sith Empire invades, and everything goes on like we see in the Old Republic, and then you play the Old Republic game. We're going to get some more in the Old Republic game because a lot of this ties into Vishyet's story. All right, any questions so far up to this point from the idiots? Let's go to Big K. Big K, how you feeling right now?
Feeling good, but any story that starts off by saying, "What should we do with those kids?" I start getting a little scared.
Yeah.
That was a common theme with the Sith tragedy storylines. It's like, it's always the kids.
Do we need to put like a warning on this or something like this? This is not going to be safe for work.
Well, Vishyet didn't fear his kids, and he didn't love his kids. He just looked at them as tools.
Okay,
what could he do with it? Yeah, sure. Vishyet's not you. Like, his kids had no chat in hell. We're going to talk about that, but as powerful as they were, Arkan Thexan and his daughter, and her name's escaping right now for the second.
Valen,
yeah. Especially Valen, as powerful as they weren't as powerful as Vishyet, and he had no worries. His thing was to mold them in certain ways to use as tools for his plan. And because of the way things were going, he was like, okay, I'll have this as kind of a stopgap with the Eternal Empire. Let's develop that as like a failsafe, and my other plan doesn't happen. Like, you know, he's always thinking steps ahead. Like, you know what? Let's change the plan. Let's develop this as a failsafe in case my original plan that I'm about to try to enact doesn't work, which was smart. Contingencies for the contingencies.
So the Eternal Twins are Vishyet's kids?
Arkan and Thexan. Yeah, Arkan and Thexan are twin boys, and Valen is the younger daughter. And you can see that in their cinematics. If you want to see their initial story arcs and stuff that leads into their parts of the game, you can go watch the two cinematics that deal with the Eternal Empire.
All right, I've heard of the Eternal Twins.
Yeah, it's a joke that's been ongoing for a long time. And actually, Arkan and Thexan and Valen are fascinating characters, and we'll get into their stories eventually. How their mother's story is phenomenal, right? You have to discuss all of them because they're all linked together. They'll do a whole story about the Eternal Throne family
Eventually we'll play it.
Yeah, we're getting close to it. Yeah, in the Old Republic. So yeah. Any other thoughts from the peanut gallery?
No. I got nothing.
Okay, now this is all game stuff. If you're not, if you, you know, if you don't want to spoil for the Old Republic stuff because it's been out for
a decade.
Yeah, or longer. So yeah. So sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Now the ceasefire lasted, as we said, 10 years. But then, as you see in the storyline, the hostilities resumed. It was only a Cold War. And at the start of the second round of conflict, one of the Dark Counselors, and you know who this is leading up to, Karth, on the Dark Council, your master, as you're playing the Sith Warrior right now, Varys, lures the Emperor to the planet Voss, where he would trap him in a domain of the dark side entity, Sel Makor. He was trapped there during the second part of hostilities. And then this is part of the Sith Warriors story arc, who goes and rescues him and releases the Emperor and becomes the Emperor's second wrath. The first wrath was Scourge that he created. So, but Scourge is the one that helps you. No, he helps the Jedi Warrior.
Jedi Knight.
So, yeah, that's his part, yeah. But yeah, he's involved with a lot of the stuff. And so now freed and with the war again in full blast, the Emperor was now ready to start and initiate his final ritual to consume the galaxy like we previously started. However, this fails as the other Star Wars, the Old Republic story kicks in and he is defeated by the Hero of Tython, which is the Jedi warrior, who destroys his body in the battle. So that's the other part of it. That when you see that final confrontation between the Sith, Darth Vishid and the Hero of Tython, that's what that is. Vishid's ready. He's got the, what he needs. He's ready to rock and roll. And that's when the Jedi Warrior comes in, the Hero of Tython. Now, even though his body gets destroyed, and by destroyed, I mean like broken, his spirit went into slumber on Yavin. Remember that. Now we come back to Revan, because now Revan's been freed by Scourge of all people and some other folks. And Revan, we've talked about him wanting to end Vishid once and for all. Not just his body, but he wants to destroy Vishid, heart, mind, body, and soul. As Revan's story, if you've not watched the video, you'll see why. This is where you, in the Old Republic game, you go and try to stop Revan because he's going to resurrect Vishid, not just his spirit, but in a physical form to finally destroy him once and for all. Of course, if you play the game, you know how this ends. Revan fails because you stop him, and what happens to his story arc up to this point. Now, the good news is the Empire excommunicates the Emperor, right? Bad news is the Emperor gets free and fed by the battle. What happens on Yavin 4, he would be reawakened from his slumber. And he was pissed. Oh, was he pissed at the Empire? Like, oh, bitches, is that what y'all want to do? All right, cool. So he decided to just enact a little revenge before he enacts his failsafe, which we just talked about. So he goes to the Empire and fully consumes, like he's done many times in the past, the planet Zois to return to full power. Because he's going to need all the power he can to, again, do his thing. He's got plans within plans within plans. Any questions about that? I think we're all familiar. I know, Ram, Karth, you're both familiar with that story arcs. For in the game. K, Big K, you with us so far there, buddy?
You haven't lost me just yet.
Okay.
Give me a couple of minutes.
Okay, yeah. Give me some time. Give him some time. He'll fuck it up. Now, after this, he fully goes and takes over this visage of Valkorion. Remember, Valkorion is basically Tenebra, who was Vishid, who was Valkorion. And that's when he unleashes the Eternal Empire upon the galaxy, and he's not holding anything back. He sends the Eternal Fleet to go after both the Sith and the Jedi. You can see this in the cinematic, because this attack was spearheaded by his two twin sons, Arkin and Thexan, and you can go watch the trailer and stuff. And during this is where you get captured as the hero, as known as the Outlander. Who had opposed him in the Battle of Yavin 4 and the invasion and everything else and the invasion of Zois. So all that stuff ties in for a reason. Now, if you watch the cinematic, you see what happens to Arkhan and Thexan, and you see that scene where Arkhan attacks Valkorion and kills Thexan by mistake. And what you don't see in after that, the aftermath, is that Arkhan, oh, does he really want to kill his father? But back to the outline real quick. Vitiate, after having confrontation after confrontation, with the with your whichever story arc you pick, you are the Outlander. He deems you to be a worthy adversary, and he needed the part of his new plan. He orchestrated his death at the hands of his son Arkhan, who then blames the Outlander to take over the Eternal Empire. That's a whole different story. And then he combines his conscience with the Outlander. There's a plan here. You're like, well, why would he do that? Oh, he had a plan. He tries to counsel and to share his knowledge with the Outlander and manipulate him, because here's his plan. He helps you now defeat the Eternal Empire and to make choices. Why? Because he wants to stop the Eternal Empire? No. He leads you to defeat both Arkhan and his daughter Valen. But why? Why is he doing this? Because he wants to turn you into the hero who the heroic liberator. And then he wants to take you over to rule as the new leader of the entire galaxy. Again, plans within plans within plans. But because of the way the story works, in a clash of wills with the Outlander, and the way it plays out, Arkhan, Thexan, and his wife, they help you fight in the clash of wills and banish him into the war. Now, simultaneously while this is going on, we talked about Scourge. The former Emperor's Wrath Scourge, along with the Jedi Kira Carson, they went back to make sure that Vitiate could not find any way back. They found his original body and destroyed it completely. And since his spirit goes into the void and is in chaos, that's where they think he's going to be trapped, right, by doing this. However, always the schemer, always the planner, Vitiate enacted a final desperate vestige of his essence, imbued into the flesh centuries earlier with Tenebar, which then would take hold of none other than Jedi Grandmaster Satil Shan and her Jedi followers. Drawing off her memories and powers, he slowly imprinted and reformed into a duplicate of Tenebra, and he threatened to use Shan as his new host. Now, at this point in the story, it's like the who's who of Star Wars gets together. You as the Outlander, Revan comes back, all the great heroes come back to join you in a last fight of the Force, basically, to in Satil Shan's mindscape. You battle Vitiate, and you finally destroy the immortal Sith Emperor once and for all. And that is where, now, I'm covering this in general. There is so much more into this, like minutia of details and stuff I'm leaving out, but this is just the general main points of this. So that's his basic main points story arc overall up to this point. Any questions, thoughts, comments, bitches, gripes, complaints?
Yeah, man, it's a lot to process. Like Vitiate's storyline is just so intense, and it really just rides on a couple of things that he didn't plan on coming back to bite him in the butt. Yeah. It's just really interesting to see how he is the opposite of every Sith that's ever come before him. Yep. Where he is not just a schemer, he knows that, you know, A, to have more than one rod in the more than one iron in the fire, but B, is that time is no longer his enemy.
Nope.
So he just waits and waits and waits.
Yeah.
And waits.
Until he thinks and waits. Right. Until the time is right, until he's got everything in place.
It's crazy. It's just crazy to think about that, because it's like, it's the reason why he's one of the most successful Sith throughout time and survives for as long as he does, is because he's like the opposite of how they typically behave.
Yeah, because he had patience. See, that's one of the things that's a downfall of the Sith. Their lust for power and everything like that made them impatient. That old Vitiate, he was as patient as they come. He was all about, you know, just waiting. He knew, you know, that's why he did what he did to be immortal, like he was, you know, the long life. Because he's like, okay, if it takes decades for my plans to come in place, I'll wait. That's cool. I can wait. You can't, but I can. That's why in that original quote, it's so on point to why we're talking about him. Like, your armies, all that stuff, time is not my enemy, it's yours. So, good luck. Because, you know, I can outlast you.
It's just really interesting to watch him turn every possible thing back to his advantage. I mean, like, when Revan tries to resurrect him, he actually uses the death that Revan caused, because Revan was trying to basically put together this giant sacrifice in order to get to resurrect him, to finally kill him, which Vitiate wanted so that he could reincarnate himself fully back into Vitiate. And so it's like he turns every misstep into another potential way to success. And it's just like, it's just crazy that he is just that on point all the time. It's really interesting to see.
And unlike other Sith, we always talk about there's that hero or two that, you know, like Revan was Bastila, you know, certain individual characters that came in to stop that, you know, stop this. But against Vitiate, it was groups of people. Even the hero of Tython had his whole posse helping him, trying to, you know, stop, you know, Vitiate's initial plan, right? And the other part, it's the entire family and you, the Outlander, and other people trying to stop him. And then the final confrontation, as powerful as he was, it was like all the great heroes of the past, including Revan, came together in the Mindscape to help fight off Vitiate once and for all. That's how powerful he was.
Yeah, it took everyone coming together, but it was kind of like his final undoing, right? Because it's everyone that he had betrayed or turned his back on.
Well, yeah, anybody he'd ever wronged in that final battle. Yeah. It's not just that, but it was all these great heroes and people, and just the will of the people that he had destroyed through these avatars that fought him. Yeah.
So it was like all of the Jedi.
No, it's all the Jedi, Sith, and people that he had just basically murdered basically the way you can look at it, and destroyed. I mean, you think about it, he consumed planets on a whim. We're about to get into what makes him one of the most powerful Sith ever, and why he's top two between him and Palpatine, of why he's so ridiculous.
That's what I'm getting at. This just sounds like episode 9.
Oh, it's beyond episode 9. Vitiate, when I tell you what he could do, you're going to be like, yeah, Palpatine was... Weaky sauce.
Palpatine was grasping for straws that, you know, Vitiate was just playing with for fun.
Well, I mean, Palpatine lost to Mace Windu. I don't even think Mace Windu could have beaten Vitiate. Had to say.
Well, it's interesting though, because it's like it's all the parts of the story that tie back together that is what leads to Vitiate's downfall. Like, the hero of Tython is able to win against Vitiate in the first place because of Mitra and Revan and Scourge letting him in on, you know, how he operates and what he does and how to weaken him and how to, like, all these things that you would have never have known. And so it was like because Revan had been a prisoner in his mind for 300 years, he had known, because Mitra was able to reassemble herself through the Force and lead you to where Revan's prison was, because Scourge had been his wrath for, you know, hundreds of years. He had, and was actually, I think in the books, Scourge was actually the one that betrayed Revan and turned him into the Emperor's prisoner was, you know, that's how long he'd been a part of this. It leads all to these culminating moment of giving you enough of an edge to turn and defeat him. And so it's kind of funny how that plays through in the long run, and when bringing down Valkorion and then Tenebrae's true self, is the same theme, is that he has left a pattern of his behaviors for so long that the people that have been around him and that have known him now have, each of them have a piece that allowed his downfall.
Yeah,
but because he always, that was one thing that Tenebrae had that was his biggest downfall, was his arrogance and his he always believed that once he had bested somebody, they were no longer a threat to him, because he could always just beat them back. And so when everyone got together and brought the whole puzzle pieces all on the same board, then it was like, oh shit.
Yeah, so. And Murphy's Law applied. I mean, no matter how much you plan and have plans within plans and back in contingencies, just don't know. You know, it's still luck. He used to pull this off. So now let's talk about what makes Vishit one of the most top two powerful Sith of all time. He was exceptionally powerful with the Force. As you know, by the age of six, he was more powerful than any combination of Sith Lord. He snapped his father's neck, and he could torture anybody. He did this to his mom with just a thought. He could torture anybody mentally. That's how powerful he was at that early age. He was one of the most powerful and knowledgeable when it came to, nobody tops him when it comes to this. Sith alchemy, Sith magic, and especially rituals. He excelled at that. And he created and devised a bunch of new ones that were so powerful, he could warp reality and life itself. That's how stupid powerful he was with the dark side. I mean, think about that for a moment. He could warp reality and make it his own, and he can fundamentally create life and take it away. That's how powerful he was with a thought, not with, you know, just rituals, but he could do that individually. We'll get into some more of that. He was, as far as I'm concerned, one of the top Sith of all time when it came to mind powers, and he had a speciality in domination of others' minds, and more than one at a time. For example, we talked about how he lured all those Sith lords in that first ritual. That was 8,000 Sith lords. He manipulated, dominated, and made them come there and bound him to his will just in that one instance. Why do you think the Sith Empire was so successful? Because they were of one mind. It was Vishit's mind. Nobody could out-dominate. It wasn't a domination thing. It was just your will versus him. And that's why the certain individuals like Revan and stuff were, but those were rare exceptions. 99.9% of the galaxy had no chance. And he could do it, not just individually. Individually for a couple people is easy, but he could do it on planetary scales with his domination.
So basically those 8,000 Sith Lords were just poopy flavor lollipops.
They were whatever he wanted them to be. We've talked about how strong he was with the Force, but the one thing is that he was able to rip the very life essence out of individuals or entire planets, and this is how he sustained his long life and grow ever more powerful in the Force. So when he did, he could do life drain, and he could also sever people from the Force. He could just look at you and go, yeah, you can't have the Force anymore. But he could also, one of the reasons he became so powerful is because of his knowledge and how powerful he was in the Force already. But when he drained somebody, it gave him vitality, but it also, you know, devouring the person in front of them, he also got, you know, some of their strength in the Force. And that's what made him so powerful in the Force as well. This is also how powerful he was. He could use the Force to create a barrier around him from everything, from blasters to lightsabers, and even other Force abilities. Force assault, it didn't matter. There's a scene in the Old Republic game after you go through the outline or initial story, right? Arkan attacks him a second time. What does Valkorion do? He just holds his hand, block,
with him.
Yeah, just toys with him. Like, what are you doing? You know, and that's how powerful he was. You couldn't hit him. He was one of the strongest masters of Force lightning, which was deadly on the lowest level. If he fully unleashed it, he could kill swaths of people. And he could create Force storms so powerful that they could dominate and destroy planets if he wanted to. Here's another thing he could do. It's so stupid. He could use the Force to summon through Sith magic to make duplicates of himself that he can use to fight with him in battles. He could create other hymns at that moment to go fight for him. He's using the clone jitsu from Naruto. He had a lightsaber and he was very good with a lightsaber. He hated using a lightsaber. He would just create other duplicates himself and just say, all right, everybody use Force Lightning. Whee! we already talked about he was a master Force Drain and Sever. And he can do this with ease, with a thought, not a problem for him. He is also, with ease, able to spirit his conscience and to project his spirit across the galaxy. He could do this for just exploration or whatever, but he could take over any individual in the galaxy. And if he wanted, he could use it just temporarily, or as he did in the case of Alcorian, take over, dominate, become that person. But he can do that to an entire planet if he wanted. He could project his spirit on an entire planet, and if he wanted to, dominate it and destroy it if he wanted to. And the last thing, I'll give you an example of how powerful Bishop was, Tenebra Valkorion. In one of the stories, there was a bunch of Sith lords led by a Sith lord named Darth Locase, who were conspiring against him to take him off the throne. Well, when they went to do their coup, you know, they went up there to take him out. Before they could even get to his palace, as they get to the steps, he's like, oh, hi. And with a thought, all the legends say is that there was just a flash of light in the Force. They were instantly dead. Not only were they dead, they were wiped from existence, never to be heard from or seen again. That's how powerful Vishyat was. On top of everything else, those are just some of the main points, and there's many more things he could do in the Force. But, yeah, that's Tenebra, or Tenebrae, if you want to sit that way, Vishyat, a.k.a. Valkorion. One of the most powerful Sith emperors, lords, deities, entities that has ever existed in the story, legends, canon of Star Wars. And now we go to final thoughts. What do you guys think? This is Darth Vishyat. What do you guys think of this this bad motherfucker? Again, I didn't get into the minutia. A little bit.
So if he's so powerful, he must feel like a real piece of trash that our characters in SWTOR beat him.
Yeah, but I mean, Karth made the point too that as powerful as he was, and you can be as powerful as you want, you always have weaknesses. His arrogance was that. Now, the Hero Tython was, you know, like, I always look at the Hero Tython as the Force trying to balance itself. Like, you know, Karth mentioned that the Force will always try to balance itself, you know, because it always wants balance. The Hero Tython was able to defeat him because he was a culmination of the will of the Force saying, yeah, we don't like that, so we're going to create a being that could stop this other being. That's why the Hero of Tython was so powerful. Plus, and he had the inside knowledge of some of the things that he could use to exploit, maybe not win with, but exploit to take advantage of the fight with him against Fish.
Well, that was the whole culmination of the storyline in SWTOR. Mm-hmm. It's not about one. When the Hero of Tython beats Vishyat the first time.
Yeah.
It's about a culmination of basically 3 to 5 characters, right? Because it just depends. But at the point when you fight Vishyat, A, he's already weak because he's trying to enact a backup plan.
Right.
B, he's you've been let in on a secret from Scourge on how to weaken him, and so you do that prior to actually engaging him. And C, you failed the first time.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why you're able to succeed the second time is because you have a connection with him that makes him think lesser of you. So he underestimates you. So when you actually go in for the last time, you actually have an advantage of doing it. So it's Vishyat, they always spell it out as his arrogance is always the reason why he downfalls, but Vishyat's arrogance has never come full circle until the final battle of for his life is when everyone shows up because he has done so much and torn away so much that everyone now is pulled together through the Force to come and beat him in one final moment. And then the tables could turn on him, and the leverage is the other direction. So it has nothing to do with you as an individual. You're just the conduit for that moment. You're not the power level for the entire thing. So it's a lot more has to do with him as a character having this problem of always underestimating an enemy he's beaten. Because every single person that shows up to kick his ass, he's beaten handedly a dozen times before.
Yeah, I gave you an example of just he's like, oh, that's cute. It's death.
Yeah.
Look at these little Sith trying to come take.
Yeah.
Just wipe them from existence.
Wipe them out. All of them.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead, Kay.
Was Yoda one of the ones that.
No, God almighty. Every time, dude. No. No. Any other questions not pertaining to Yoda?
So, okay. So if
Ram wants to speak now.
If this guy was like so powerful, okay, then imagine how powerful he could have been.
If you say Mace, you're out.
If he had that stick.
Yes, the reason he fell so much is the stick. Yes, you're correct. It was the lack of the stick. Well, I don't know. Maybe the Hero Tython, that's how we beat him, with the stick.
Ooh, you know what?
Didn't think about that, did you?
That explains a lot. That explains how he beat him. Absolutely.
I mean, he didn't have it, but I mean, it's just a nice thought.
That is so Ram's next character, isn't it? Mm-hmm. He's going to find a stick to use in SWTOR.
Well, we are going light side, so, you know, if I'm a Hero of Tython, I have to walk around with a stick. Mm. Think Barrow can find one for me?
The only dark side entity that I would say, the two that come to mind when it comes to just power and what they were able to do and how just destructive and powerful they were in canon, legends or otherwise, right? Palpatine for sure, right? Palpatine was on the same level at Vitiate, different, but on the same level. The other character, and she's more of an entity than anything, is Abeloth. Abeloth was the... I would love if we could ever see a fight. If I don't know how they would do it, but some way that Vitiate and Abeloth went at each other. Could you imagine the destruction that those two would unleash on the galaxy if they ever had been in the same timeline going at each other? That would be horrifying.
It would have to be like a Star Wars Visions thing. It's like a what if series.
Yes.
Because I feel like they would be like the people who would be literally hurling planets at each other.
Pretty
like
much.
Not just like rocks, like entire like
asteroids. They're consuming
fields
planets of life so they can get their power level up as they fight and are throwing stars at one another. That's how ridiculous those two were.
Yeah, like it would have to be like one of these things. Like it could never unfold because it would literally just end with the galaxy not existing.
Well, no, they could fight in the void. You know, that's how they defeated Abeloth, was Kraid and Luke had to fight her in the void, right? Let's say their two spirits fight one another, fully super Saiyan charged, and they can do whatever they want and see who could just with sheer power beat the other one. It'd be a hell of a fight, man. That's how ridiculous Vitiate is, and I'm comparing him on the same level as Abeloth, because they both could dominate and do all this crazy shit. It was unbelievable. I mean, the when I read some of these stuff, I'm like, he did to 8,000 Sith Lords? Jesus Christ!
That's... Hey, Ranger.
Go ahead, Kay.
You said they would throw stars at each other.
Oh, God.
Not even gonna let you go down that road because I know where you're trying to lead to. Don't say it.
Well, like sun, stars. They're the sun. Like, you know, sun's a star, like that.
Yeah. And your point.
That's what I'm saying. So they would throw like suns at each other. And stuff
yeah.
Like that.
You just want to say Starforge, man. Just shut up.
where would they get an unlimited supply of
stars? Stars. Yeah, it's the Starforge. You know that I knew exactly what he was trying to do as soon as he said it. Hey, Randy, aren't sun star? Okay, here we go. Here we go. Here we go with this nonsense. Hey guys. All right. Any other final thoughts, questions before we wrap it up?
Nope. I got nothing. Nada. Yeah.
All right.
Sadao.
All right. So with that, we are going to wrap this one up. Thank you guys for joining us on this latest edition of Star Wars Lore with Idiots. We do this every 2 weeks. So if you like this kind of content, please watch it all the way through. It does help expand our algorithm that is YouTube right now. And again, think about coming to Patreon if you want to help support us. We have different tiers that you can donate toward, and it all goes toward being able to put out this kind of content for you guys. That being said, hit a thumbs up, subscribe, all the video, all that crap. But with that, especially if comments, interaction on the videos is always appreciated. And give your thoughts on what you think about Vishit. And with that, may the force be with you. We'll see you next time. Peace out.